Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
I've never heard a person walk out of a stadium and say, wow, I wish that game would have included more waiting.
He is an endless source of baseball and hockey knowledge.
José Berríos, el lanzador de Puerto Rico en el Clásico Mundial de Béisbol.
Sean Morosi, every week with Wyman and Bob.
You're being serious with me right now?
It's always good to hear his voice, whether the Mariners are rolling or struggling. And right now they are rolling through that red series. And I'm sure he's got a few thoughts on that. He's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He is our guy, John Morosi. How are you, sir?
Good evening to both of you. And as I noted yesterday, I believe the series score is the big storyline. That being humans 3, iPads 0. As soon as Scott Service said, enough with the iPads, just use your eyes and your intuition and your skill to hit the baseball, hey, the Mariners are undefeated. I expect them to run the table for the rest of the season at this point.
Certainly. That's a fair expectation. But do you think that speaks to what could be a bigger problem throughout as we get deeper and more reliant upon analytics and film study and things like that, that – you know, some people won't trust their eyes. It's got to make sense in these numbers, and they don't go with feel. They go with, well, what does this stat say? Do you think is it paralysis by over analysis? What do you think?
I do think there's some of that, and I should be clear. I recognize the value of analytics in the game. They've brought so much, and it is an important component. But notice that I said component. It is not the game. And I had somebody actually in the game tell me today, just I was at the Comerica Park today for the Rangers and Tigers, and the point was made to me, if your point after, let's say you strike out, second inning, you strike out on a pitch that you think is outside, and you get called third strike, and it's right on the black, maybe it's right there, maybe it's an inch or two off, but it's a close pitch, 50-50 pitch, it goes against you. Does it really help your confidence and state of mind to just watch the iPad say, see, I was wronged here. This is wrong, and I'm really upset about this. And it just affirms how upset you are that you were the victim of a bad break, and we're going to stew on that for a while. Or find a different way to turn the page and have a little bit of a better approach for your next at-bat. That's it. Control the controllables, and that pitch is gone. The call is gone. And I think that's one of the things that all of us, by the way, all of us to varying degrees in these technological times, question comes up, issue comes up, first thing you do, you grab your phone. Sometimes the answer is there, but sometimes the answer is not there. And I think that is, at the risk of getting too philosophical, what is happening now. It is objectively harder to hit than ever. I think I mentioned this last week, I've had managers, hitting coaches say, man, it's tough out there. You got 100-mile-an-hour fastballs, 90-mile-an-hour sliders, and Dr. Glenn Fleissing, I actually heard him do an interview recently on MLB Network Radio, who basically said, and it's true, yesterday's, the generation before, when I was covering the Mariners back in the before times, 2005, fastballs would be 90, 91. Now sliders are 90. And so it is objectively harder and harder than ever to hit. But I think that Scott Service's point, and it clearly worked, at least for a few days, against a good ball club, by the way, in Cincinnati, is that let's not be so quick to dive into the iPad screen and the analytics, especially in the game. It's a useful tool to help you prepare. But I've had somebody just tell me today, simpler approach is better. And again, easier said than done. It's the ball's coming at you 100 miles an hour, and I respect how hard it is. I just think the Mariners might be onto something here where let's have analytics, yes, but a lighter touch. Good for before, but in-game, let's trust our instincts. And then when it's a 2-2 count and the tying runs on second base in the eighth inning, maybe you trust yourself more and worry about the iPad less.
I feel like Service is the perfect guy for that because, you know, we've talked to him, JP, and, you know, you can tell he respects the analytics, no question about it, but he seems to have a really good feel, and also he's a catcher. You know,
that's right.
I mean, I feel like catchers are they always turn. I mean, I think it's like 95% chance that Cal Raleigh is going to be a manager.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, it seems like that's right up his alley.
That's a great point about Scott's perspective. And he's done it for a long time. He's worked in player development, too. And this is the other part of it that I think is so important. And you know this, Dave, from playing football and going through different games in competitive circumstances. The game plan is important. It's important to be prepared. We all feel that in life. It's a very valuable thing. But as soon as the game starts, the preparation time is done and the performance time has arrived. And I really think that we need to do a better job in baseball of separating those two things and letting players play and letting yourself just be in the moment and go. And I think you're exactly right that Scott Service in his career, I'd bet you he'd probably say how many times if you asked him, how many times did you get a scouting report when you're playing for the Cubs or the Astros, any other organization, and it said, hey, against Bonds, let's do this. Well, if Bonds hits the first two curveballs that he sees onto Waveland Avenue at Wrigley, maybe we should make a different approach. And you shouldn't say, well, at 3 o'clock I was told this. Yeah, but at 7:30, Bonds hit a ball that's still traveling at 8. So let's make an adjustment here. And I think that catchers, to your point, have a little bit of a better intuitive knowledge of how to do that because you have an idea of what the pitcher has equipment wise, but if he's got no feel for the slider, I don't care if the scouting report said, yeah, you have to feed this guy slider after slider after slider. Yeah, but my guy can't locate the slider today, so you got to make a different plan. And I think that was Scott's way of bringing a bit more human element. And wow, look at the way the Mariners played. Look at the quality of at-bats that we saw, and now J.P. Crawford coming back in. I think that as tough as this April has been for them, they've gotten themselves right back to the brink of 500. They're playing a team in Colorado that they should take a series from. So maybe after an early stumble, maybe they're starting to get some positive momentum.
Hey, as far as this rotation goes, John, it looks like they have found the form we expected them to start the season with. They've had 7 quality starts in a row. Bryce Miller has looked fantastic.
Yes.
And as has Logan Gilbert. Dave was asking me earlier, right now, who do you think the ace is on this team? Just based on how they're pitching right now, it's one of those two. It's Logan Gilbert or it's Bryce Miller. You know, we're still waiting for, you know, Castillo did have one of those quality starts. We're still waiting for that ace level start from him. We haven't seen that one yet. And Kirby seems like he's trending back towards being Kirby. But even with Emerson Hancock in there, if he can just give you 5+, 3 runs or less, keep you in the game, you feel pretty good about where this rotation sits. Are you surprised they've been able to do this considering they've, you know, they got off to the start that they did? Brian Wu has not been a part of the proceedings. You had to bring in Hancock when he probably should be in AAA. What's your take on what you've seen from this rotation to this point?
Very pleased. And I do think that the ERAs for Castillo and Kirby will start to look more like you would expect in the relatively near future. And again, I will, to support my previous point, now invite a little bit of analytics into this conversation, which is that when you look at what the Mariners' rotation has done, they're fielding independent pitching, so limiting, obviously, the understanding that balls in play are somewhat random, but trying to eliminate home runs and walks. The Mariner rotation has walked the fewest batters of any rotation in Major League Baseball this year. And they also have struck out, I believe, the second most. And so that dichotomy, bunch of strikeouts, very low walks, that will play over the big 6 months of the regular season. That is going to show up and improve. I really believe that Castillo and Kirby have both thrown the ball better than what their ERAs indicate. This is the ultimate small sample size time of year. So I agree. I think Hancock has done more than a capable job of being the fifth starter in place of Brian Wu. And in Seattle, in this way, their DNA remains intact. This is a rotation – dependent team that I do think offensively will get better. I think they already showed some signs in this last little while of becoming a better ball club. They're still in the bottom third of Major League Baseball right now in OPS. I do think they're going to climb out of that to at least being a league average team. And a league average offensive club with this kind of rotation, I believe, has an excellent chance to make the playoffs.
JP, I'm not sure what the numbers are in Colorado offensively as far as, you know, home runs flying out of the park, but, you know, typically that's a place that, you know, there are lots of home runs. And, you know,
yes.
Just wondering about what you saw from Julio. I feel like that was really those last two games I thought meant a lot to him. He got a couple of singles the other night and then two doubles the other day. He's making great catches. He's throwing people out at third. I mean, I wonder if this will be a place for him to finally get right, a guy who's batting .219 right now.
I agree. And if there's one thing that we learned from Julio last year, it's that he goes from 0 to 100 about as well as anybody in the major leagues. And that encapsulates both his ability to play defense in the no-fly zone and get great jumps, but also the ability to offensively go from slump, 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 best player in baseball like the next day. And I think that's – we have to remember the overall arc of what he has done and still can do. Last year – some would have still described Julio's 2023 season as streaky. Well, the streaks still wound up at a 30-30 season with 100 RBI. I think anybody should hope to be that streaky. And that's part of what you get with him. Once he gets locked in, and I agree that you've got a good series at home, travel day, then go play in Denver. The interesting thing for me, and I really am intrigued by this, it's early still, but I think it's going to be a fun thing to watch. You look at the way the schedule breaks down. The Mariners should win the series in Colorado, and then three really interesting opponents. You've got the two World Series contestants back-to-back at Texas, home for Arizona, and then you go to Atlanta, a perpetual contender. I think we'll know a bit more about this team by the time they arrive back by the time they finish up that series against the Braves on the 1st of May. There's going to be, I believe, a little bit more truth-telling about what kind of club they've got. And I frankly believe it's going to be in the positive. This team is getting better at the right time. I also look at when you go from the hitting environment of Denver, which you alluded to, Dave, to then go to Texas, I've spoken with so many different players over the years who said, yeah, Coors, the way the ball flies, awesome. It's great for offense. We know that. But when you then adjust back to sea level and the ball starts spinning differently, curveballs break differently at altitude than they do when they're at sea level. Just the air friction is different. And so as a result, your overall approach to hitting, just when you feel like you've gotten things figured out, the atmosphere changes on you again, and you go from Coors Field back to a dome in Texas. So just keep an eye on that early next week and see how they end up adjusting there. But I agree. I think that they're poised to break things out in a positive way, and it's happening, guys, at a time where I've had three or four baseball conversations today about, man, are the Astros really this bad? And people are asking that question in a way that's and again, I realize we're a little bit reacting to not even a full month of baseball, but people who have seen the Astros consistently are worried, and that obviously has a direct impact on the Mariners and their chances for the playoffs.
What do you make of the division to this point? You just brought up the Astros, which obviously they've lost three in a row. They're in the bottom 7 of 10. They've lost 6 and 14 on the season, but they're the A's ahead of them, and even the Angels at this point. Sitting there tied with the Mariners at 9 and 10, Mike Trout looks like Mike Trout again. But how much of this do you expect to hold true? Like, if we're talking about this division in August, what does it look like in terms of here are the Rangers, Mariners, Angels, A's, Astros in this order? Do you expect it to resemble this?
I'm officially worried about the Astros in a way that I'm just not sure if they have really brace themselves yet for what is to come, because when you have a team that's been going for it and going for it for a long time, and you've extended a lot of guys, you brought in a lot of veterans, and then all of a sudden guys either get hurt Of course, they get Verlander back tomorrow, so good news there. Or in the case of Abreu, just he just hasn't hit and really isn't defending that well either. So they've got some major issues. And so I do not see the Astros finishing ahead of the Mariners this year, based on what I've seen so far. And I saw Texas today in Detroit. I still think they are the most complete team in the division based on what I've seen thus far this season. And remember, they are where they're at right now without having anything from Scherzer, DeGrom, or Mally. And they expect to get all three of them back by the time we're into the second half, or at least August, effectively. So internally, they're going to get, I think, a lot better. And Semien was all over the field today. He's fantastic player. I love watching him play. So they've and I think Lankford will adjust and get better. They've had some guys get injured who, and they're still playing good baseball. So what I've seen right now, based on what I've seen so far, Texas has the best roster, which isn't a surprise. They won the World Series last year. But looking at the rest of the division, the Mariners, I think, are the next most complete team based on what I've seen. Oakland, you got to give Mark Kotze a lot of credit. He's had this team playing good baseball, as good as they can play. I think very competitive, keeping that group unified them into all the off-the-field stuff about where they're going to play next year. So I've been impressed by Oakland. The Angels are better, at least with Trout playing well, but I still worry about their pitching, and Stevenson's out for the year now, and Rendon still really hasn't done much this year. So it's now almost back to being what that team was before Shohei arrived, which was Trout and then a lot of questions. And I think that's who they are still in Anaheim.
We're about to talk to Josh Rawich, and I know that you're a big Cooperstown guy, JP, but we're going to talk to him about the Trans-Pacific Exchange of the game. It coincides with the Ichiro's expected induction into the Baseball Hall of Fame. But 150 years, I had no idea that had been going on that long. Tell us a little bit about what you know about that.
Well, first of all, Josh is an amazing guy. You're going to love talking with him. Let him know that I can't wait for my next breakfast with him at the Cooperstown Diner, which is the spot to be when I'm there. I always love seeing Josh there. But and by the way, you guys are welcome to join. We're all
okay.
The same family.
We'll get out there. See you there.
Yeah, come on. So yeah, ask how early will the Cooperstown Diner open for all of us when we're there for Ichiro next summer? Ask him that. That'll be a good icebreaker first question. But it's amazing how, and to be honest, growing up in Michigan in a small town, I didn't really have a full global appreciation for what baseball is and what it has been and what it represents. For me, honestly, it was really when I moved to Seattle, covered the Mariners for that season, that I really began to understand through covering Ichiro. And at the time, Hasegawa was on the team. Jojima arrived the next year. So Sasaki had been there. So there was this real understanding, in addition, of course, to the ownership at the time, of how important baseball is in Japan and then globally. And you really get a sense. What I want to share with you about Japanese fans and the respect they have for the game is this. I was covering the Premier 12 tournament there in 2019. And this is it's a short story, but I think it tells you a lot about the respect they have for the game there. I was broadcasting that tournament, and there was a player, you may remember him from the Angels for a long time, Efren Navarro. Efren Navarro, a long time, sort of a first base, DH, outfielder, wonderful guy, Efren. And so Efren he had played in Japan for a couple years, and then he was playing for the Mexican national team in this tournament. Every time that Efren Navarro came to bat at the Tokyo Dome, the fans cheered for him because he had played in Japan. So it was their sign of respect that you, as a Mexican-American, in Efren's case, had come over to play baseball in Japan and honor the game in that way. And then they were showing their respect to him because he had then come back to represent his country, Mexico, and play even against the Japanese national team. That to me, I get goosebumps telling that story because you really get a sense for the connection that exists, the respect that exists, and truly, when Ichiro's inducted in the Baseball Hall of Fame, it will be a baseball event of cultural celebration and respect unlike any that we've ever seen, because we've never had someone with his story and his Trans-Pacific resonance arrive to the Hall of Fame in these modern times where that will be broadcast all around the world. It's just, it's special. So in 150 years, it goes back to the earliest introductions of the game and how it was such a very important part of U.S.-Japanese relations. And it has been that way over time. And there have been ups and downs and peaks and valleys to those relationships in the last 150 years. But the game endures. The relationship, I think, is stronger than ever. And as someone who's had the pleasure of broadcasting games in Japan, I look forward, any chance I can get over there, I go, because it's just a very, very special place that loves the game in the same way that we do.
Hey, I got to ask you one hockey question before we let you go, because
sure.
I had a couple of my buddies who are certainly much bigger hockey fans than I am that were just willing to bet their life savings that Hextall is not going to be the coach of the Kraken next year. Does that feel like, and I know coaches have come and go pretty rapidly in the NHL, so it's a fairly common practice, but what do you imagine his future looking like as it pertains to next season?
I think it's still up in the air. Obviously the Kraken have not come out and said one way or the other. This does not, so I'll back up and say this. It's clear to me that there need to be some adjustments to the roster, the way they do things. It was not, by the end of the year, and you know this, it was not a great, exciting product. Mm-hmm. And so either you've got to make some adjustments to the roster, which could be expensive, or you adjust the coaching staff and systems in the way that you do things. And I do think this, that you're now at a spot where the newness of the franchise and the building and the excitement, you go to the playoffs last year, have a pretty good run, but eventually the quality of the product needs to be what sells the experience and the franchise. And I think we would all look at this team and say they were not one of the more exciting teams in the National Hockey League this year. And whether it's going to the collegiate ranks for a coach or just looking for others that have earned the opportunity, I think that's what Kraken management has to look at. Is the coach the issue, or is the personnel the issue? And generally speaking, coaches are easier to hire and fire than entire teams. And so we typically just know how that tends to work. But I do think that they have reached a very, very unique point. And I'll say this, especially in hockey, because of the amount of turnover that happens in coaching positions, it does. We saw a number of teams make changes in season this year. I've always felt that if you want to fully change the culture, and if you feel as though you need to do that in a wholesale way, and if you are going to let a coach go with the first sign of trouble next year, just make the change now. Because if you need somebody to come in with a new culture, that takes a long time to develop. And if you get off to a poor start, the first time you lose three in a row, then you make a change, then you've basically lost next year too. And I don't like that. So I if they believe they got to make a change, make it now.
John, as always, great stuff. We appreciate it. We'll talk again next week. Have a great weekend.
Really enjoy it. Give Josh my best regards. And again, all of us, the whole Seattle sports traveling party, we're going to hang out at the diner.
Cooperstown Diner. There we go.
Cooperstown Diner. You got it.
Thanks, buddy.
All the best. Thanks so much,
John.
Guys.
There you go. There's John Morosi with us each and every week. If you missed any of that conversation, just head to the podcast page at seattlesports.com after the show. It'll be right there waiting for you. Click subscribe. That's the key to the whole thing. Coming up, we just talked about him. Josh Rawich of the Baseball Hall of Fame will join us next for more insight on what should be a historic summer next year for the Mariners. That's coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
The Mariners Kids Club is 100% free and a great way to get your kids excited for a lifetime of Mariners baseball. Sign up online and your youngster will receive a Kids Club hat, access to early gate opportunities, discounts, and more. Go to mariners.com/kidsclub to join.
Have you considered surgery or even joint replacement? Hey, it's Dave Wyman, and before you make that decision, see Dr. Mark Wagner, MD, at Seattle Sports and Regenerative Medicine. Why? Because he gives it to you straight. Dr. Wagner said my right knee needs replacement, and I appreciate his honesty and expertise. My left knee is fine right now, but the minute it isn't, I'm heading to Dr. Wagner for his expert opinion. I want to avoid another surgery, and I've heard so many patients rave about results from their 90-minute outpatient stem cell procedure with Dr. Wagner. He's a board-certified Seattle physician with over 30 years of experience and has performed more than 20,000 stem cell procedures, using a person's own stem cells to regenerate cartilage in their own joints. People with severe osteoarthritis, even bone on bone, are back doing what they enjoy without pain and without surgery. Whether it's a shoulder, hip, elbow, ankle, wrist, or knee, before choosing surgery, see Dr. Mark Wagner first. Go to drmarkwagnermd.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
It's always good to talk baseball with our guy, John Morosi, who joined us in the previous segment. And now we're going to be joined by a guy he spoke very highly of, a man who's got some influence over this whole Baseball Hall of Fame. And they've got something new they are going to unveil that is very, very cool. We need to talk to him about. He joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He is Josh Rawich, the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're doing great. We were just talking with our guy, John Morosi, and he made it clear that if we buttered you up and talked nicely to you, that you'd get us reservations at the Cooperstown Diner out there for breakfast for me and Dave, my co-host, and you and John Morosi. Is that possible? Can you make that happen?
I love it. They do not take reservations because they have like four tables, but John usually shows up there and we have our annual breakfast. And if you guys come, we will find a way to take care of you.
Yeah, Josh, I'm here. I already called Casper. He's waiting for us at 7 a.m. We're good to go.
Casper.
Yes, I love it. I love it.
I had to stay back after the break just to wish you well and this great new adventure there. 150 years of Trans-Pacific Baseball, and just say hello, my friend. Enjoy the conversation with my buddies here. They're the greatest.
Thanks, JP. Good to hear your voice, buddy.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, JP.
Josh, is there a nicer guy than John Morosi? Seriously.
There is not. Oh, man, he's awesome. He does such a great job covering the game and truly loves the sport on an international level, frankly, the same way that I do, and kind of perfect for what we're about to talk about.
Yeah, so 1,800 square feet, this is going to be unveiled here soon. You know, I was telling JP, like, 150 years of baseball in Japan. I had no idea, but, tell us about, it's very cool, and especially for, you know, Mariner fans, that it happens to coincide with hopefully Ichiro being inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, so we're in Tokyo right now. We just had an amazing event yesterday at Ambassador Rahm Emanuel's personal residence, where we unveiled or announced that we're going to be doing this exhibit next summer. So, yes, you are correct. It is timed to the first year that Ichiro is eligible, but obviously, more than anything, he wants to not make any assumptions, and of course, we don't either. So this exhibit is going to happen regardless of whether or not Ichiro gets elected. And it's I think very surprising to a lot of people that they've been playing baseball here for 150 years, and there's so much passion for the sport out here, and what the way the game has really gone between the two countries over all these years, from teams coming out you think of like Babe Ruth barnstorming out here, and the Brooklyn Dodgers coming out, all the way up to modern times with Shohei and all the other amazing players in the league. It's a pretty impressive long history, and that's really what we're going to be telling the story about in Cooperstown.
So is it going to be, I would imagine it'll be educational for a lot of people that aren't familiar with maybe some of the bigger names coming out of Japan that never made it into you know, Major League Baseball. You could talk about Sadahara Oh and players like that. But is that sort of how you look at it as well? Is people that enter this exhibit, they're going to be able to learn about some of the greats that maybe they've never heard of, even though they're baseball fans?
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly in a lot of ways what every one of our exhibits at the Hall does. There's clearly diehard baseball fans who can recite every stat and tell you every guy or every person who was involved in the sport. But we are an educational institution. We're a nonprofit museum. So, of course, we are trying to teach people things that they might not know. And, yesterday it was pretty cool. At the news conference at the ambassador's residence, we had Masanori Murakami. I don't think, not necessarily everybody knows about this guy, but he came out here 60 years ago, pitched two seasons for the Giants. And then there was nobody that came to the States until Nomo 40 years later at the Dodgers. And that's those are the sort of stories that we want to tell. And you guys might remember the name Warren Cromartie, former big leaguer, goes and plays in Japan and wins an MVP out there. And Bobby Valentine, people like that I think is part of what we're trying to do, is help people understand that this is not just a recent thing where Shohei showed up and started doing what he's doing. It's been a lot of years and a lot of work by a lot of people.
Hey, Josh, so, you know, we've mentioned the fact that it's 1,800 square feet, but just kind of take us through what the exhibit sort of, what do you have, what do you learn? Is it, you know, that kind of thing, or is it more just displaying memorabilia? What's it look like in there?
Well, what's cool, for those people who haven't been to Cooperstown, I mean, I realize Seattle's a little bit far away, but if you do have an inductee, it will be well worth the visit, because the museum itself has about 40,000-plus artifacts that we've been saving for years. We've got 3 million documents, all these incredible things that are really the preservation of the history of the game. So this particular exhibit will probably be different than anyone we've done in the past, because I think there will be more technology. I think it's going to be part of what we're trying to do is make sure that the museum continues to stay relevant for the next generation of fans. Because I don't know how old you guys are, but I can think about my dad and my grandparents going there and loving the museum like an old school museum. And I think it's important that we think about the kids who are going there and making sure that there's interactives and there's cool things for them to do. So those are the sorts of things you'll see. We're still starting to get into we just announced the launch of this thing, but it won't actually open until next July. So I can't get too deep into specifics other than really just telling you that this is, it is going to be well worth the trip for Mariners fans who want to come out to Cooperstown.
So how long has it been in the planning stages, if you will? You just talked about just making the announcement, but how long has this been a conversation that this is something we need to do? This is a focus we'd like to have within the museum itself.
It's probably been several years now. I mean, there's obviously there's no shortage of history, but as we do look to someone like Ichiro, who we knew was going to be eligible for the first time next year, and I've actually had a chance to spend some time with him and help him understand what we're doing out there. It's been several years that we've been talking about it. And actually, one of the really cool things, I don't know whether people out there realize, but Ichiro is like a massive fan of the history of the game. He's been to Cooperstown 7 times himself. He used to come in the off season and walk around kind of quietly when nobody realized who he was. And so you really get a sense of how much it means to him what we're doing out there. And I think that's probably why this is such a no-brainer exhibit, because if he does get elected, of course, we'd have a separate area specifically dedicated to him, like we do all of our electees and inductees. But completely separate from that will be this history of baseball between the U.S. and Japan.
Boy, it's amazing if you look at some of the things that Ichiro has accomplished. I mean, you know, we all know him for the Star Wars throw, the laser from right field, mm-hmm. but it is incredible mm-hmm. the number of different interesting facts about Ichiro.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly, when you look at actually that when you guys were probably a couple years ago when he got inducted into the Mariners Hall of Fame and shocked everybody by just dropping a perfect 10-minute English speech. I mean, this guy has a lot of depth to him. He clearly loves the sport. And when you come out here and you spend any time here in Tokyo and just throughout Japan, you realize he's still 5-plus years after he's retired. He still resonates in an amazing way out here. And we actually brought with us one of the artifacts. We have his cleats from when he set the single season record in hits. So we brought those out with us, and you could see there were like 30 media members at the news conference yesterday just wanted to take pictures of his cleats. that gives you an idea of just how much he means in this country.
Josh, would this exhibit feature American players that excelled in Japanese baseball? I'm thinking of, I always heard the legend of Tuffy Rhodes, who's an American who played out there for a long time. I think, what was his claim to fame? He hit like 3 or 4 home runs on opening day or something like that. But I always remember hearing about it. Is that something that would be part of this, or is it strictly Japanese players?
No, you just nailed it. It is very much both directions. So there's been a number of players, but there's actually a guy in the Japanese Baseball Hall of Fame we visited yesterday, named Randy Bass, who was a big leaguer and went out here and put together an incredible career. And more recently, Matt Merton, if you remember the outfielder, Matt Merton, and Adam Jones of the Orioles, actually Mariners, former Mariner Adam Jones.
Yeah.
We just saw him a couple days ago at MLB Network. So those are the sorts of guys, too, that quite often they'll finish their careers out this direction. Or nowadays, you're starting to see guys come out here, have success, and then come back to the U.S. afterwards. So, yeah, those are definitely the sorts of stories that we'll tell. It is not just about the Japanese players and teams coming this way. It's the American teams and American players going that direction as well.
Very cool. It opens in July of 2025. Very cool exhibit that'll be out there celebrating 150 years of baseball in Japan. Josh Rawich, the president of the National Baseball Hall of Fame, has been our guest here. Josh, real pleasure to speak with you. Really appreciate you taking a few minutes with us, and we look forward to that breakfast with you and John Morosi. That's going to be a lot of fun.
I appreciate it, and hope we get to see everybody out in Cooperstown soon.
Thanks, Josh.
Thanks, Josh.
There you go, Josh Rawich, and
look at you, Tuffy Rhodes.
I used to hear his name stuck in my head because it was a unique name. I couldn't tell you any. I had heard his name, and that he had hit like 3 or 4 home runs on an opening day out there, or something like that. Yeah. I couldn't tell you anything.
Carl Derek Tuffy Rhodes.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of name. It's like I remember a name from the Arena League, Hunky Cooper.
Yeah.
Couldn't tell you anything about him. I just remember the name. Yeah. But, I think he had a really long career in Japan, Tuffy mm-hmm. Rhodes. Anyway, so that sounds like a very cool exhibit they'll have out there. Our thanks to Josh. And if you missed any of that conversation, you want to check that out, again, check out the podcast page, seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab. Click on our picture. It'll be right there waiting for you. Coming up, we had a common theme for today's What We Learned. We'll all find out exactly what that is coming up next. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Have you considered surgery or even joint replacement? Hey, it's Dave Wyman, and before you make that decision, see Dr. Mark Wagner, MD, at Seattle Sports and Regenerative Medicine. Why? Because he gives it to you straight. Dr. Wagner said my right knee needs replacement, and I appreciate his honesty and expertise. My left knee is fine right now, but the minute it isn't, I'm heading to Dr. Wagner for his expert opinion. I want to avoid another surgery, and I've heard so many patients rave about results from their 90-minute outpatient stem cell procedure with Dr. Wagner. He's a board-certified Seattle physician with over 30 years of experience and has performed more than 20,000 stem cell procedures, using a person's own stem cells to regenerate cartilage in their own joints. People with severe osteoarthritis, even bone-on-bone, are back doing what they enjoy without pain and without surgery. Whether it's a shoulder, hip, elbow, ankle, wrist, or knee, before choosing surgery, see Dr. Mark Wagner first. Go to drmarkwagnermd.com.
You're free now. Free to stream beyond your wildest dreams. Free to be everything you imagine, and then some. That's how it feels to have Quantum Fiber. Your world unleashed. Learn more at quantumfiber.com. Limited availability. Service in select locations only.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind. until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a house of learned doctors.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard.
What did we learn today?
No one's a bigger idiot than me.
Stupidity is the easiest way out.
Stupidity can be the easiest way out. The great Mike Ford.
You know what? We might have to add to that. We might have to add the Pete Fairbanks all-encompassing suck.
Yeah.
Tack that on.
I was dying when I saw that last. That was so funny. All right. What was the common theme for today's What We Learned?
Well, we were talking a lot about things being honored, jerseys and things getting taken down, retiring and all that. So yeah. The common theme seemed to be that, you know, Dave Wyman has a lot of things that have to do with his jersey or his place up there in the facility and at Lumen. So the first thing we learned is where Dave Wyman's place of honor is at Lumen Field.
Walking there, there's a picture of me. Yeah, there's a picture of Dave. There's history.
No.
Yeah, there are. You just got to walk around the whole stadium, Dave. it's the one I think you were.
It's in the men's room.
It is. It's in the back stall. There's some drawings on it too, and a lot of funny numbers on there, phone numbers. But that's another story.
Paul was on a roll there.
That would be funny if they put up pictures in the bathrooms at Lumen and you got relegated to a stall. It's the Wyman stall.
Yeah, I'm looking at you.
Yeah. Are there pictures of you around the stadium?
I don't think so.
I've seen one of Paul either, but I will admit I've not. Much like this building, we're in it every week and have been here for years and years, but I don't have all these pictures memorized. So maybe there's one there that I'm walking past every time I'm there, not realizing. I know there's some Dave. I've certainly seen Craig, Zorn, Largent. You know,
would be the really good Seahawk players, Bob.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying I've seen pictures from that generation, but I don't know that I've seen Paul. I've seen Dave Brown. I've seen a picture of him there. I don't know that I've seen you or Paul.
Yeah. No, there's a lot. Sam Atkins.
I don't know if I've seen that one. I'll have to take a tour around the building and see. We'll take a picture of your picture.
I don't think it'll be worth it, Bob.
You don't think so? Yeah. Hey, there's Dave. I'm going to tweet it.
It'll be like a big pile, and my butt will be in there, and that's all you'll see.
Nobody needs to see that. Let's move on. What else did we learn?
Yeah, on that note, wow. Well, it sounds like, Dave, that you had a nice self-guided walking tour earlier down there at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center, but we learned that you had an ulterior motive for seeing what had changed down there.
I walked in, and I'm like, okay, to the left, there's the owner, Jody Allen, up top. That huge picture is still up, and she was raising the flag at that time. And then, you know, I looked inside the facility, all the banners, like including the 1988 when we won the AFC West, when we were in the AFC West back in 1988. And, you know, that's up. All that stuff's up. The huge Super Bowl banner and the indoor facility still has the record and all the games and the results and the, you know, the Lombardi Trophy and all that depicted. It's a huge banner. And then, you know, you go and look. I went down to make sure they didn't take down my little plaque where I was drafted in 1987.
It'd be funny if your name was the only one. Your name was one gone. Yeah.
That's what I was looking for, Bob.
Pearson's hiding it in his office.
Yeah, just to stick it to me. Yeah.
Well, and then John did say they're going to put up, like, video boards and stuff out there that'll rotate pictures of Seahawks history. And that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, just put up big monitors. And
I bet they'll do something more than that. I bet maybe it'll be in-wall giant video boards or something.
You think
maybe they'll take this out of here and it'll...
I think bigger than that, hopefully. Yeah, you think you and I will make it onto the video board?
You will.
Interviewing John Schneider.
Yeah. If it's that picture, it'll be like my foot or something caught in the screenshot of him.
But maybe they'll put that picture of you and I on the teeter-totter.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Isn't that on our...
I changed it for the season. It's now Dom Canzone making fun of you. But we'll bring that back around. We got to update for the seasons.
Lefko
that is a good
when
one.
People make fun of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, he likes it when people make fun of other people.
I like when people make fun of Dave.
We know that.
It gives us it gives us material for this segment. So.
It's all done for the show, Dave.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. What else did we learn?
We learned, finally, that Dave has a secret plan to retire as a Seahawk.
What goes into that, and would it ever happen for Dave Wyman?
Well, I don't think Dave's ever asked, but...
Did John ask?
Yeah, he asked.
I was hoping that, like, if I did it, maybe there'd be a clerical error and you'd sign me for the veteran minimum, you know?
Dave would hold you to it. He'd
yeah,
say,
sorry, man.
Contract's a contract.
You signed it.
You're on the hook.
You imagine him having to spend $1 million in cap space to get my fat ass?
Oh. Would you cut him a break if he made a mistake like that? Would you say... I'll let you go for $250,000.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. No. So let me keep $1.
$1?
Yeah.
$1, and then he picks up the bar tab for years.
Yeah, there we go.
Something like that. I did. That's interesting that John asked. He said he didn't want to – what did he say? He didn't want to retire in the CFL or as a CFL player?
Canadian Football League. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
That's cool. And then they sounds like they celebrated all day and into the evening over at Dino's. Even better. Even better. Did we learn anything else?
No, that was it. That was the theme for today.
All right, that does it for us. I appreciate everybody tuning in. If you missed anything from today's show or any day, all you need to do is head to seattlesports.com, click the podcast tab, scroll down to our picture and click on that, and it'll be right there waiting for you. And as Dave and Lefko tell you every time, click subscribe. That way it's downloaded automatically for you. You never have to go through that process again. Either way, we appreciate you tuning in. We're back tomorrow right here with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.